I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Read all about it. More messages between top intelligence officials are shared by a journalist. Find out what was said. Revolt from within. As the war with Israel rages on, Palestinians lead a large anti-Hamas protest in Gaza. Media accountability. The heads of NPR and PBS are on Capitol Hill amid Republican calls to end funding for both organizations. And spend all day with the Lord. We'll tell you about a very special upcoming event at the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, The Atlantic releases the entire signal chat among Trump senior national security officials. It includes what times American fighter jets and sea-based missiles are launched. The disclosure follows two intense days of scrutiny over just how The Atlantic's editor-in-chief was included in that signal chat and whether war plans were revealed or not. And two senators on the Senate Armed Services Committee are requesting an inspector general investigation. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, President Donald Trump's national security advisor Mike Waltz posted on social media today, no locations, no sources and methods, no war plans.
In the group chat, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth posting multiple details about the impending strike on the Houthis, including when a strike window starts, where a target terrorist was located, and the time elements around the attack.
Out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans because they know it's not war plans.
On Capitol Hill, top intelligence officials testify before House lawmakers a day after Senate Democrats grilled them over the signal chat.
Know that there's only one response to a mistake of this magnitude. You apologize, you own it, and you stop everything until you can figure out what went wrong and how it might not ever happen again.
The director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, agreed it was a mistake to add a reporter.
National Security Advisor has taken full responsibility for this, and the National Security Council is conducting an in-depth review, along with technical experts working to determine how this reporter was inadvertently added to this chat.
Presidential Counselor Alina Haba calls this a distraction.
This is, in my opinion, something that they're making a big to-do about nothing. Waltz has done a tremendous job, and let's talk about what he did. He took down the Houthis with Pete Hegseth, and that was important not for this country alone, but also for the world.
And Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins defends her fellow cabinet members.
President Trump has utmost confidence in my colleagues in the cabinet. I think that the pace at which we are winning on issues that the people of America voted on is absolutely unprecedented.
And Sean Parnell, a spokesman for Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, posted on X today, no targets, no locations, no units, no routes, no sources, no methods, no classified information. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, now to the Middle East, where thousands of Palestinians demonstrated against Hamas amid growing frustration with the war in Gaza. Now, this was the second day of anti-war protests in a very rare display of public anger against the militant group. The protests erupted after the collapse of a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, reigniting the fighting after several weeks. Many locals say that they would like to see an end to the killing as their region is ravaged by war.
We came out to protest against Hamas because it has been proven that it is an accomplice of the occupier in the death of our children. Most of the Hamas leaders are installed abroad and make statements and negotiate with our blood. We want to remove them from power, even if it is by force.
Hamas is an Islamist militant group which spun off from the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. The group took over the Gaza Strip back in 2006 and has received a terrorist designation from governments, including the United States and the European Union. The group is also responsible for the attack on Israel on October 7th, 2023. All right, for more, let's bring in Gaith Alomar. He is a senior fellow at the Washington Institute. Gaith, thank you for your time. Always good to see you. So how significant are these protests?
Right. Thank you, Tracy. Look, I mean, first of all, I really want to thank you for covering this. I mean, these are people who are taking great personal risk to do something that is very, very important and courageous, and they need to be highlighted. Now, how significant? It's very significant. As you said in your reporting, this is very rare, almost unprecedented during wartime. This is an indication that the people are not only fed up with Hamas, and this has been the case for a while, but also that the people start to believe that Hamas is getting weak enough that they can go out to stand against them and maybe have some hope in toppling them. So this is very, very significant. Where it's going to go, we don't know, but I wouldn't dismiss it.
Yeah, and Gaith, as you mentioned, I mean, they're taking risks doing this. Do you think the purpose of these demonstrations is simply solely about wanting to get Hamas out of the region, or is there more to it?
I don't think these are planned demonstrations. These are angry people who have just had enough. Clearly, if you look at their chants, I mean, they are as much angry at Hamas as they are at Israel. So, I mean, these are not pro-Israel demonstrators, but these are people who just want the war to be over, want to have normal lives. I am actually very heartened when I look throughout the Middle East. I see how some of the media, say in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, are covering these demonstrations. So at least there is regional support for it. And I think like-minded people who want to see Hamas out of the game so Gaza can go back on the right track actually can take good advantage of what's happening on the ground there.
Yeah, Gaith, previously we've seen Hamas violently crack down on other protests, but that does not seem to be happening this time, at least as far as we know. Why do you think that is?
Actually, they are cracking down, but they're doing it in a smart way. They're not in uniform. They're dressed in civilian clothing, masquerading as, you know, spontaneous Hamas supporters. In reality, Hamas is cracking down. But we have to also acknowledge that Hamas has been very weakened. The Israeli attack on Hamas has severely degraded their military capabilities. So this is a moment of hope. Yet, I would not underplay the risks that these people are going are facing. Hamas still has arms, maybe not enough to threaten Israel, but certainly enough to threaten these people. And Hamas has a history of being very, very brutal.
Almost out of time here, Gaith, but quickly, where do you see this going? And do you think the U.S. can make a difference in ending the war between Israel and Hamas?
I think the U.S. could definitely make a difference. I think it has to put pressure on Hamas, which is putting, but also on the Israelis to come up with their own ceasefire plans. But I think the main thing that the U.S. can do right now is to tell Israel to stay away from these demonstrations, not to embrace them, not to give them the bear hug, let it play its course. Don't make these demonstrators being vulnerable to being accused of being Israeli collaborators. Let's step back. Let's support these people. Let's highlight what they're doing. And let's push Hamas at supporters as well, like Qatar, but also the Israelis, to reach a ceasefire.
All right, we're going to leave right there. Gaith, always good to be with you. Thank you for your insights.
Thank you.
One day after a truce is reached between Ukraine and Russia, both sides are accusing the other of breaking it. In a U.S. brokered deal, Ukraine and Russia agreed to pause military attacks on infrastructure. Now, Ukraine says the Russians launched over 100 drones last night, but most were shot down or disabled. Meanwhile, Russia says Ukraine launched a drone attack in the Crimea Peninsula, leading to power outages. Both sides have denied launching the attacks. And joining us now with more is Andrei Dobryansky, the Director of Communications for the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America. Andrei, good to be with you. With Ukraine and Russia really pointing the finger at each other, what happens from here?
I think this is simply a repeat of what we've seen over the course of this now 11-year war. Remember when there was that contentious meeting in the White House, one of the things that President Zelensky said was there's been 25 times since he was president, so that's beginning in 2019, that he made deals with Russia where they broke those agreements. So similarly, the United States is now coming across this very aggressive negotiation, but really a dishonest negotiation. What happened after the phone call with President Trump, President Putin, was that there were two different press readouts, and they decided to enter things like having a hockey tournament in the United States, things that the United States wasn't in agreement with. So similarly, what's happening in Saudi Arabia is we're having these long discussions, but then after the fact, Russia releases, we want this other stuff as well. And it's detrimental to the peace process.
Yeah, French President Emmanuel Macron said today that a proposed European armed force could be deployed to Ukraine in the event of an eventual Russian attack. What more do you know about this and your thoughts on all of it?
Well, what's happening in Europe is there's a lot of talk about potentially putting peacekeepers on the ground after a negotiated ceasefire. However, that's not coming anytime soon. What President Macron said today definitely buoys the hopes of Ukraine that members of the Coalition of the Willing, which is what it's being called in Europe, many countries, not just Europe and France and the UK, but many countries would like to help Ukraine in some way. And there's been some vacillating in terms of the discussion, because 2 weeks ago it was very strongly about having their peacekeepers deployed. Then it kind of slowed down, but I think what's happening out of Saudi Arabia and the increase of attacks, I don't think that's being reported enough, the increased attacks against hospitals, against children's facilities, that's all happened since the time that President Trump began these negotiations.
Andre, almost out of time here, but I want to ask you, quickly, how important is it that peace is achieved, and really what's at stake here?
What's at stake is how Europe is going to go forward. Obviously, what's being mentioned by the United States about Europe arming itself up is different than what the United States policy has been since World War II. We never wanted to see Germany arm up again. We never wanted to see more nuclear states. But if we don't contain this problem now, I think the biggest issue for the world will be, do other countries feel safe without having a nuclear weapon? Because Ukraine was the one that gave up the third largest nuclear force, and this is the way it's being treated. So that's the future of the world that we need to worry about.
All right, Andre, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
More than a dozen are dead following dangerous wildfires in South Korea. The flames destroyed more than 200 structures and forced thousands to evacuate. One of the structures was a Buddhist temple originally believed to be built in the 7th century. Some of the temple's treasures were evacuated before the fire reached the buildings. Observers say the ongoing wildfires are the third biggest in South Korean history. A 22-year-old man was brutally attacked in Pakistan after refusing to convert to Islam. The man, working in the paper mills, suffered severe neck injuries after his supervisor accused him of desecrating the Quran found in the trash. The attack was reported by Aid to the Church in Need, and it comes amid major challenges for religious minorities in the nation. Well, back here in the United States, could popular programs on PBS such as Sesame Street and the NewsHour be on the chopping block? President Trump and many congressional Republicans are looking to cut more than $500 million in annual government funding from public broadcasting, accusing it of bias. Republicans at a House Oversight Committee say taxpayers should not be footing the bill.
NPR and PBS have increasingly become radical left-wing echo chambers for a narrow audience of mostly wealthy, white, urban liberals and progressives.
Democrats accuse Republicans of a partisan witch hunt.
My Republican colleagues are dragging in a scapegoat, this time PBS and NPR, to try to distract from the fact that Trump and Musk are robbing working people.
House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer displayed posters with what he says were false headlines from National Public Radio on stories his panel was investigating.
They're wrong about COVID-19, and the headlines from the background, I don't have time to go over all these headlines that are wrong. About Russian collusion, wrong, wrong. About the Hunter Biden laptop, wrong.
The head of National Public Radio defended the network and her role in developing stories.
I have no editorial role at NPR. In other words, I do not decide what we cover or how we cover it. I lead NPR's strategy.
The head of public broadcasting championed programming toward children.
Every child has the opportunity to learn and be excited about the world around them when they enter a school for the first time, and to give them those core basic skills that we can see they carry forward in life.
Do you think that it's appropriate to expose children to issues of transitioning? Do you see a problem with that? Is that something you should avoid?
That is not anything on any of our children's programs.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene says PBS has featured drag queens.
If I had walked in my living room or one of my children's bedrooms and seen this child predator and this monster targeting my children, I would become unglued.
Republicans will ultimately decide whether to fund public broadcasting when it finalizes a bill with President Trump's agenda in the months ahead. One indicator for confidence in the U.S. economy has hit a 12-year low. The findings are from the Conference Board, a business membership group. It gives the economy a 65.2 rating, the lowest since 2013. The organization's number for a healthy economy is an 80. Now, the White House is responding. An advisor told CNBC that the economy is showing strength overall, pointing to low layoffs, steady retail sales, and stable housing demand. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including pooling the funds. As the Trump administration plans to pull millions of dollars from Planned Parenthood, we speak to pro-life advocates about the news and what comes next. Plus, a one-off prayer initiative 12 years ago is now an annual event. How you can join the Pope in prayer this week. Police in the UK are urging the mother of a newborn baby boy to come forward after he was found dead outside of a church in West London.
If you are the baby's mother and you see this today, I want to appeal directly to you to come forward and receive help. My priority is to help you.
Now, the body was found inside of a shopping bag outside of All Saints Church by a garbage worker. The Metropolitan Police are urging the mother to come forward for her own welfare and her health. A reaction is pouring in after a report reveals that President Donald Trump is set to remove tens of millions of dollars in government funding from Planned Parenthood. Writing on the social media platform X, pro-lifer Lila Rose says in part, quote, Planned Parenthood killed nearly 400,000 babies last year. Huge win from President Trump. Well, the news comes as Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, announces an initiative involving 150 leaders from all 50 states who fight for the unborn. The pro-lifers sent a letter to members of Congress asking them to stop the flow of tax dollars to the abortion industry. And for more, we turn now to Kelsey Pritchard, Political Affairs Communications Director for Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. Kelsey, good to be with you today. We want to hear more about the outreach to lawmakers, but first, talk to us about the report that the Trump administration is set to revoke tens of millions of dollars from Planned Parenthood. What more can you tell us about this proposal, and how significant is it?
Yeah, this was good news yesterday that we got from the Trump administration. This would potentially put $20 million on the chopping block from Planned Parenthood, because the bottom line is that abortion is not family planning. And so we're glad that this is being reviewed. Now, this is under the lens of DEI. It's not final, but it's a good first step and a good continuation from what we've seen from the Trump administration, which also in their first week in office enacted the Global Protect Life rule that would prevent our taxpayer dollars going to international entities that perform abortions.
Kelsey, we want to talk now about your group's outreach towards lawmakers. Tell us, you know, more about who is involved and what's the reaction been so far?
Yeah, we have, as you said, groups from all 50 states that signed on to this letter saying that we want to defund big abortion through reconciliation, through the budget process in Congress. And we're banding together as the pro-life movement to get this done, because the reality is that Americans are subsidizing the leading cause of death in our nation. And 1 million abortions are done in a year in this country. 400,000 of those abortions are done by Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood gets $700 million annually in taxpayer funding that they get every single year. And so this is the year to get it done. This is the next priority for the entire pro-life movement. We've seen amazing success in taking down Roe and enacting pro-life laws in almost half of the states in our country, and now we are focused as a movement to defund big abortion.
Kelsey, what are the next steps in the fight for the unborn, and are you optimistic that taking Title X money from Planned Parenthood is the only start here?
Yeah, this is just the beginning. What we're really after through reconciliation is the Medicaid funding that Planned Parenthood gets. That amounts to about $529 million a year. And so that would really be a big blow to their industry that ends lives, the industry that harms women, and the horror stories that have been coming out on Planned Parenthood about women. We got news last month that this girl in Colorado, this 18-year-old girl who died from a botched abortion in a Planned Parenthood. And so this is really a great way for the pro-life movement can come together to fight against the abortion industry, to save more lives and to help more women.
Kelsey, thank you so much for joining us, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a royal change of plan while the King of England is postponing his visit to the Vatican, plus a special way to unite in prayer with the Holy Father. We'll explain. Charles III and Queen Camilla have postponed their trip to the Vatican next month. The royal couple says they made the decision on advice from the Holy Father's doctors. The medical personnel want to give Pope Francis more time to recover following his weeks-long stay in a Rome hospital. The King and Queen were set to visit Rome as part of the 2025 Jubilee year. 24 hours for the Lord, started by Pope Francis early in his papacy, have become a global Lenten tradition focused on adoration and reconciliation. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigan has more.
An important Lenten appointment for prayer. This is how Pope Francis has described the 24 Hours for the Lord, a Lenten initiative of prayer and reconciliation inaugurated by the Pope himself at the start of his pontificate. Every year, for one day, a church in every diocese around the world is kept open for 24 consecutive hours, inviting everyone to pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament and encounter Jesus through confession. While the day is observed worldwide, the initiative first started in Rome at the International Youth Center Centro San Lorenzo. In an interview with EWTN recorded on February 4th, Daniele Venturi, who passed away a few weeks later on March 13th, described the night when everything started 12 years ago.
One of the most significant nights that ignited this Eucharistic spark was during the period between the resignation of Benedict XVI and the beginning of Pope Francis's pontificate. We were right here, inside the very church where we find ourselves today, engaged in intense prayer that lasted several days, 24 hours a day, day and night. 24 ore giorno
e notte. To the prayer group's amazement, Pope Francis heard about the gatherings and sent them soon after his greetings, gratitude, and rosaries. One year later, Pope Francis instituted 24 hours for the Lord for the entire church. Even as the initiative has gone global, Centro San Lorenzo continues to hold its own gatherings, staying true to its mission of prayer and adoration.
The adoration of the Holy Sacrament is the center of this center, is the heart of this center, because it is there where everything is born.
As with previous years, the event will take place on the eve of the fourth Sunday of Lent, from Friday, March 28th to Saturday, March 29th. For this year, which falls within the 2025 Jubilee of Hope, the motto chosen by the Holy Father is taken from the words of the psalmist, "You are my hope." As it does every year, the Vatican's Office for Evangelization continues to invite all dioceses and parishes worldwide to embrace this moment of prayer and forgiveness as a chance to grow closer to the Lord.
In a world in which so many of our relationships are mediated through technology, I think one of the great antidotes to the disconnection we experience is Eucharistic adoration, because we place ourselves in the presence of the Lord, and He is fully present to us, waiting for us to engage with Him.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank her for that story tonight. And now I'd like to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for welcoming me into your homes and into your families. For the past 5 years, working at EWTN has truly been a blessing and an honor and an answered prayer for me personally. So it is with mixed emotions that I say goodbye to all of you, my EWTN family. And even though this is my last broadcast here on EWTN News Nightly, I will always hold you and my time here close to my heart. And for one last time, thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.